start with the ending. It's the best way to begin.
Well, we're back. Thank you for tuning into the Drew Marshall Show. We've got 9 weeks left. And then after 16 years, the last show will be on June 29th. Appreciate everyone who's been along for the ride. Just want to let all you know, all you folks, kind people know who've been praying for the end of the show, your prayers have been answered. All right, we are trying to finish on a strong note, programming-wise, and boy, this is kind of a vulnerable thing to do, but that's just, I don't know, it's been my desire from the beginning of this show, is to talk about stuff that maybe others won't really talk about. Otherwise, it's just more of the same radio. So we have decided to end with a series called Rebuilding Love, How Can a Marriage Rebuild After It Ends? This is a 9-week series with my wife and I and relationship guru and psychologist Dr. Sue Johnson. You see, my wife and I tried for 28 years of doing marriage our way, but eventually it ended. However, after a long separation, Bev and I recently renewed our vows down in Mexico, and I asked this psychologist and relationship guru, Dr. Sue Johnson, to help me. Not to screw up again, you know. We got to figure out how to do this right.
So she's a miracle worker?
Basically. Yeah. She came along, slapped me on the forehead, and I gave her some money. So we got to rebuild the love between Bev and I, but this time we want to do it with new foundational building blocks using tools that we've never really had before. So Dr. Johnson agreed to personally take Bev and I through her Hold Me Tight program. And this week, we are going to air for you conversation number 2, Finding the Raw Spots. There's part 1 and part 2. We'll break in the middle for a commercial. Last week was Demon Dialogues and how you can have those circular arguments where you just trigger each other, and then all of a sudden, it's this vicious circle. That conversation is on our website for you to watch. Last week, we played it on the show, but you can watch the actual conversation with Bev and I and Dr. Sue on our website, drewmarshall.ca, and click on the big green bar there, the big green bar. That's a great description. So there's 2 parts to that banner on our website. One is, if you are interested in registering yourself or getting the Hold Me Tight program for you and your partner, you can register there at drewmarshall.ca. Click on that banner. That'll take you right to where you need to go. It's a paid endeavor, obviously. But let me tell you, when you add up the hours you need to pay to sit in front of a shrink, this pales massively in comparison. You know as well as I do that it is worth investing in your marriage. And this is a small investment compared to a lot of the stuff that's out there, folks. So I want to highly encourage anybody to go to drewmarshall.ca and click on the Hold Me Tight. I got to figure out what it says.
Banner?
Yeah, that's it.
Just go with that for now.
So if you want to follow these painfully authentic and vulnerable conversations with my wife and I and Dr. Sue, then again, go to drewmarshall.ca. You can either register for the Hold Me Tight program or you can watch the last 2 weeks of videos. Here we go with Hold Me Tight, conversation number 2, Finding the Raw Spots. We're really actually privileged to have Dr. Sue Johnson walking Bev and I through a new old marriage. We were married for 28 years. We're separated for 2, and we are back together again, and we don't want to screw it up this time. Sue, go.
Well, I think you guys are really just fine this time, okay? Because you're paying attention to your relationship and learning how to dance together. You're going to learn how to dance together in a different way, so that's fantastic, right? So last time we had the first conversation that I put out in the book, right? Hold Me Tight. And yep. The conversation was finding your demon dialogues. The dance you get caught in when you feel disconnected and everything starts to go wrong and you suddenly feel like you're married to your worst enemy. So we talked about that, right? It happens to everybody. It happens to everybody, no matter how much you love each other. And you guys, we talked about it. And as part of what you were going to do after the session, I asked you to think about a little piece of dialogue, structured dialogue, where you would be able to say to each other, you know, when I get upset or when things go wrong, when I don't feel safely connected, what do I do? I push or I yell and then what does the other person do? When you yell at me, I move away and shut down. And then what happens, right? And everything starts to go wrong. So we talked about that. Right. So,
and Sue, I just want to let you know that we came up with the name of our dance.
Yes, I asked you to find a name. What was your name?
It was the Moon Dance.
The Moon. Okay. No. It's a marvel. It's a marvelous night for a moon dance. But here's why. It's the Moon Dance because I wax and she wanes.
Okay.
I get bigger and more louder and wax on poetically and crap on with my words, and she just kind of wanes and kind of retreats.
That's totally beautiful. I love it. That's so perfect. I love it. I love it. And that's
went for a knuckle punch and she just took all the credit. Jeez.
Right. That was you, Bev, right? That was
yes,
you?
Yes. Well, we were trying to come up with something. Oh, please give me something.
Okay. That's yours.
Yeah.
Well, what I remember you saying was, Drew, you said, I sort of feel somehow lonely. I sort of feel like I don't know where she is. And sucky. What happens is I get snarky.
Sucky.
I remember.
Sucky.
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 But you Hold also on. Said,
I get sucky like and snarky, both of them. Yeah. I'm really good at both.
Okay. So you get sucky and snarky. And actually, those two things do go together because most of us at first get sort of sucky, like, wait a minute, where is this person? And then when we can't find them, the easiest way out of that sort of feeling of anxiety is to get angry. So then you say, where are you? Right, and then it sounds angry. So you get sucky and snarky, and you get bigger. And then, Bev, what you said, what I remember is you said something like smaller, but I couldn't quite remember. I seem to remember that you just turned away or you start to move away from him, and you said a word that I thought was really interesting and that we might go back to today. You used the word overwhelmed. Do you remember using that word?
Yep. Yeah, we talked about that again today.
Right. So how would you, so when you're waning, what words would you say to it that you want to sort of retreat, or I'm not sure what words fit for you?
Yeah. I mean, it's different now than it was before, but back at the end of our marriage, I would, yeah, just retreat and just disappear in a hopelessness.
You avoid.
Know, avoid. But then there was just a sense of giving up.
Right. Because you feel overwhelmed, there's nothing you can do.
Yes.
So you just give up. And that's so human. I mean, that's what we do. It's almost like we're like a sort of little animal in the forest when we feel hopeless and helpless. We don't know what to do. We go still and silent, right? Mm-hmm. That's our way of protecting ourselves. We just go still and silent and hope the storm passes. Right? The storm in this case being Drew. Oh, yes. And I hope that you guys really started to see that you trigger each other and you move together. So the more Drew would get sucky and snarky and get bigger and demanding and critical, right, the more you would then start to feel like there was nothing you could do. You'd just kind of try to disappear. Right. And inside it would feel overwhelming, but you get smaller and further away. And the further away and the smaller you got, the more Drew would say, where are you? Because we talked about how that's the crucial question in relationships. Well, how come you're not responding to me? So Drew get bigger. And this dance would take over your relationship. The moon dance would take over your relationship and leave you both alone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I want everyone to get that that's where this place goes. That's where this kind of dance goes. We all get caught in it sometimes, but if you don't know what's going on, you can't catch it and turn it around, you both end up alone, and that hurts. All right, so you've got the moon dance down. Did you actually notice the moon dance this week at all? Did it actually happen? And
I don't know. What do you think? Did it happen?
I don't think it happened, but, you know, we've dug deeper into what used to be and triggers and, you know, doing a little bit more homework on what's coming up. So we,
Well, the hardest thing for us, I think, Sue, right now is we really feel like we're in a different headspace and it's not like you're just on your honeymoon. No, we've been together for 30 years. This ain't no honeymoon. It is a new thing. It's a new us. It really is. And so
we're trying to dig back and to think about ways that we did the demon dance before. And to be honest, we struggle coming up with stuff, which is a good thing in some ways.
It's a good thing, but you know what, guys? It's still so good that you're doing this because it's wonderful to renew your relationship, and you're different people now, right? And you've learned so much from each other, but you will get stuck again.
Yeah.
And it might not be exactly the same because you're different people, but you will get stuck again. So this is still really useful. But I hear you when you say, hey, we're not stuck back there now. We're not so stuck back there, right? But it's useful to talk about this. So today, we're going to try and look at the next piece in the conversations. We've looked at the dance that you used to get stuck in. And, you know, on one level, you have a new relationship and you've grown a lot. On the other level, you're still the same people. You're pretty, you know, you're a pretty big dude, Drew. I can imagine, you know, that trying to dance with you sometimes would be like a little overwhelming.
But you know what's interesting is that's not the first time I've been told that. And you know, you're a presence, or you walk into a room, or you know, and some people have perceived me as being maybe arrogant, or you know, that, which is also the thing that hurts me the most, because man, I, you know, like most people, maybe with a bit of bravado or whatever, it's a sham. I'm an insecure little boy who, you know, my huge, you know, the second chapter that, or a second conversation, finding the raw spots, my huge raw spot is rejection.
Yes. And you know, and that's a lovely thing to say, because it leads us right into this. The conversation we're doing now is finding the raw spots. And what you just said was perfect, because the bottom line is we all have them. And, you know, I think out there in the world, sometimes there are some people who come on like they don't have them, like they're so together and they're so, you know, cool and they're so, but we all have them. We're all human beings. And loving someone means that you're vulnerable to them. Just because they're so important to you, you're vulnerable. We're all vulnerable to feeling rejected, not wanted, not enough. We're all vulnerable to feeling somehow like we don't matter to this person. We're lonely. They're not there with us. We've lost them somehow. We can feel deserted. That's wired into your nervous system. That you don't have any choice in what I just said. The choice you've got is to whether you can admit it and recognize it and work with it positively, or whether you're going to like deny it and try and, you know, and then it's much better to admit it and work with it positively, right? So this is the raw spots conversation. So we're not looking at the dance so much now. We're looking at the music that plays, the signals you send each other. You'd send snarky, angry signals, and Bev would try to send no signals at all after a while. She'd just shut down, so it was silent.
Yeah.
Right? And it's hard to dance to silence. So you'd get louder and louder, and she'd shut down. But what we're doing here in this conversation is we're looking at this raw spot, because underneath those coping mechanisms of you getting snarky and her shutting down, there's hurt. There's more emotion going on that it's hard to talk about when the dance is going on. So that's what we're doing here. We're talking about raw spots, and we all have them. Nobody doesn't have them. We all feel deprived. We all feel deserted, right? And the thing is, this comes up fast. I mean, you can be looking at, I've worked with so many couples. Couples can say things like, we'll talk about the last time they got caught in the dance. And I'll say, well, what was the trigger? What got you so upset? And for a while, they can't figure it out. And then someone will say, it's that look on his face. Or it's her voice. She raises her voice.
Or when your husband raises his eyebrow at you.
Yes, and I talked about that. When my husband raises his eyebrow, some part of my brain goes, uh-oh. Right? So it's like the whole tone changes for me. You're in a different dance, right? So that's right. So part of what we're going to do today is we're going to look at what triggers you into your raw spots, because when we get triggered, we're suddenly off balance and we dance in ways that just freak our partner out. You get snarky and that freaks Bev out. She shuts down and disappears on you, so you're dancing all by yourself. That freaks you out.
Yeah, but hold on. I have good reasons to be sucky and snarky.
Yes, you do. Of course you do.
I don't think so.
No, I mean, we were talking earlier about the sore spots. Is that what they're called? Hold on, I got to get
raw spots.
And
you can't move close to somebody without them occasionally touching where you're raw.
Yeah. Well, we discovered that, what's the best way to communicate this? Look, whether it's as a result of me being adopted, I could raise that victim flag up the pole real quick. Or I grew up in a family that was just so totally different than me. I've always felt like the outsider, the outcast, or the black sheep, or, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so, you know, rejection is a weird thing for me. And we talked about how, you know, I had this family, this mom and dad who sort of, they always kind of had this higher ground, not higher ground. Oh, that's the name of the cafe we're in right now, by the way. This moral ground, higher moral ground kind of thing about them. They were like pillars of the community and just even keeled and everything. And I was the nut job of the family. And
so you couldn't measure up.
I couldn't measure up. And then, boom, I end up marrying someone who's the same as my family. You know, she's this even keeled, you know, higher moral ground. Like, I was watching a comedian the other day on Netflix, who shall go nameless. I won't mention the name. And I was killing myself laughing. But then I looked over and I could feel the disdain coming off of Bev in the other room. And like that full body eye roll. You know what
disapproval.
I mean? Yes.
So you help me. I think what you're saying to me, Drew, is, Sue, I have very good reasons for the raw, vulnerable places that I have where I feel vulnerable. And what I'm particularly vulnerable to is some disapproval, some feeling like I can't measure up, some feeling of being outcast. I'm not in this relationship. I'm somehow outcast. I'm somehow rejected. So that's your raw spot?
Yeah, but at the same time, in social settings, I will say something so asinine that Bev rolls her eyes. And then the question came up when we were talking about this. Well, then why do you do that? Why? And I do that it's the quickest way to figure out if that person is worth my time or not. Or if they're going to judge me with their little elitist high moral ground crap, then I ghost them. They don't exist anymore.
Yes, but you can't do that with her because she's your special one. So yeah. Then you're stuck, aren't you?
Yeah, kind of figured that out.
So wait a minute. So three times you've said she rolls her eyes. She rolls her eyes, and when she does that, I'm outcast. I'm not in, and I can't measure up. So that's something that happens to you and used to happen in the past where your vulnerability comes up, and the trigger for you is that she rolls her eyes?
Well, it's not necessarily an eye roll. No, she's not an actual eye roller. Like, we don't have to call the local priest because she rolls her eyes so much. I just know. How would I know? How do I know, though?
You just end up feeling like somehow you're not on in the playing in the same league as your lady. Somehow you're not measuring up.
Right from the beginning, Bev was the classy one and I was the village idiot. And as soon as we got together dating, the number one response from everyone was, I'm sorry, what? You guys are what? Whoa, that's a weird match.
All right. So any trick, it triggers you anytime you get the message, wait a minute, I'm still somehow the village idiot and I met this classy lady, right? And somehow I'm not going to be able to measure up and somehow I'm going to get the disapproval, right? And then I'm outcast, right? And that's your trigger. When you would feel that, Drew, if you slow down for a minute and feel that, when you actually feel that, that's old for you, and it gets triggered here. Can you feel that in your body when you talk about that?
Yeah, as you're saying that, you know, earlier we were talking about feeling in your body. What? The only thing I really feel is like bloated or gas or something, but that's a little too much information there. But as you're talking about it now, and we're kind of getting into the context of things, it actually, my first reaction is to poke even more. It's to...
Of course. You say, where are you? Don't disapprove of me. Don't cast me out. Don't disapprove of me. Don't leave me feeling like the village idiot. Where are you? Where are you? Poke.
No, like, oh no, hold on. I think I mean, okay, fine. You want me to, you're going to see me as the village idiot? Like, hold on. It starts with me going, wait, I might be the village idiot. Are you okay with that? And then if they go, yeah, you're the village idiot, I go, you want to see village idiot? Here I come. And then I make them feel so uncomfortable.
You're a provocateur.
Oh, right? Sorry. This is with other people, not with Bev.
Is that right? So you kind of, when you're starting to feel vulnerable, you'll kind of get on your bike and you'll start pushing to see what's really going on, and you'll be provoking. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in your body, what do you feel? Agitated or upset?
Agitated. But then I'm actually not a huge confrontational person. Whenever there is confrontation, I get all wound up inside. I'd rather just ghost somebody. You do not exist anymore.
But in fact, that's not what you've done in this relationship. I think you've come for her and tried to get her to respond. Yeah.
Yeah. I certainly have come from... You do not exist anymore. I'm going to go live my life somewhere else.
Yeah.
Wait a second. We are back together because you chose me. You had a great life without me, and then you screwed it all up and re-invited me back in.
How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, but if we look at the way it used to go, and the vulnerability is presumably still there because it's just part of you, right? This is what happens. You start feeling outcast, disapproval, and there will be times when you go back there, I would imagine, right? So then you'd try to reconnect, and if that didn't work, you might go off. You ended up going off and giving up, but you try to reconnect, and you'd get sucky and snarky, and you'd start getting bigger, right, in that, and you would say, you help me. Your body, you'd get agitated, but in your mind you'd say to yourself about the relationship, because we, in these situations, we catastrophize, we feel unsafe and in danger, and our mind starts to predict danger to sort of protect us. So you'd say, what you'd say, oh right, I'm the village idiot. Oh, right, she doesn't want to be with me. She doesn't want to be close to me. You'd help me. What would you say? What would come up?
Oh, I don't know. I'm really stuck in this one. I think if I'm going over it quickly in my brain, I think I would actually kind of do this. I would go, hey, I'm right here. Wait, I have things to say. I'm important. I have great ideas. I have great thought. I see the world differently. And don't you want to hear what I see and what I'm experiencing? I want to share this with you. And
that's inside, but I see anger.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So for me, I said to him, I can see your raw spot. So if we're talking about something, or he's trying to show me something, and I disengage, or if I look away, or heaven forbid, I look at my phone.
Or play your game on your iPad while I'm talking to you.
You see anger. So when you know he's triggered, you see anger in him.
Well, because he wants your undivided attention. If you take it away from him at some point, he feels rejection, and that goes right into...
What a suck.
Well, no, it's a trigger. It's a raw spot, right? So he goes into, you're not valuing who I am or what I have to say or what I'm saying.
So our old life, I would get angry, and yes, Everybody would know it, and we'd have a house filled with eggshells.
So you're helping him. You're helping him by saying, I think you would go, what I would see on the surface, which is what I was going to ask you in a minute, is anger. So what he'd show you is anger. He wouldn't show you all this other stuff that's going on. And what you'd get is you're guessing and you're saying, I think you'd go into some feeling of, I'm not paying attention to you. You're not special enough. You know, I'm treating you like you're the village idiot. I'm not paying attention. So probably Drew was feeling something like, where are you? You're not paying attention to me. I'm going to get bigger. I'm going to get angry. Don't reject me, right? Don't tell me this. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like that.
Yeah.
Why does my part sound so childish and dopey and immature? I don't want to be a little suck.
Drew.
Yes.
Yeah. This is a big, big, big boo-boo we've made in our society, okay? There's nothing sucky or childish about being able to look at your vulnerability and be able to say, this is my vulnerability, because we all have it. What strength is, what we started to understand from the new science of bonding and relationships, is that what strength is being able to recognize our human softness, our human vulnerability, and recognize it and do good things with it. Recognize it to understand other people's vulnerability. Recognize it to reach for other people. You know, strength is really about what you're doing now. It's about having the courage to say, of course there's times when I'm vulnerable. Of course there's times when I need things from other people because I'm a human being. And that's just called being human. And we've told people lots of fibs, especially men. We've told men, oh, if you have soft feelings or vulnerabilities, it means there's something wrong with you. No, it just means you're a human being. You know, you're a human being. And we told women, if you have softer feelings, it means somehow that you're, you know, you're kind of a bit crazy or a bit weak or you're depressed or you're neurotic. No, it just means you're a human being. And part of what this new science tells us is it tells us who we are, you know, and who we are is we're people who need other people, and we're people who have it wired into us to be afraid of rejection and afraid of being deserted. That's a survival code. That's what love is. It's a survival code. If our ancestors had not been afraid of being rejected by people they depended on and abandoned by the people they live with, we would have all wandered off into the forest and died. We'd have all got eaten by tigers or something. You know, those of us that were slow to get afraid like that or to recognize our vulnerability, we didn't survive. This is part of, I'm not going to let you put yourself down, okay, on this show, all right? In fact, you're modeling for other men that real strength is about being able to say, yep, I have these vulnerable feelings and I can cope with them, talk about them and share them. And what's more, I have a partner and we'll cope with them together. So I want to know, there's sort of a list that I know you've already said some of them. I think, you said he wants my attention. I want to know, what is that soft place for you that you don't show Bev? It hurts, right? When you don't get her attention, when you start feeling like the outcast, the person who can't measure up, the person who's going to be disapproved of, right? You get agitated. You say, I'm not valued. I'm not good enough for Bev. You help me. What does that hurt feel like?
For me, it...
You used lonely last week.
Well, I think actually you helped me flush out the word lone. Oh, maybe I said it. I don't know. But I think I want to go back to that again. I had a very lonely existence growing up. Here goes the pathetic thing. Oh, sorry. I'm not pathetic.
Sure, history.
Growing up in a funeral home, I didn't find out till later that my friend's parents didn't want them to come over and play. Remember, you used to phone friends and go, hey, you want to come over and play? And my friends all couldn't come over for whatever reasons. And I bribed them. I said, well, I've got ice cream. I've got cookies. But I found out later that it was their parents that said, no, we don't want you to go play at a funeral home. Thank you very much. So, right. You know, it was a bit weird for me, maybe.
So fair? Okay, so you're saying, you help me, you're saying, you know, underneath this thing that, you know, the my raw spot, I would show anger, but underneath it, what I'd feel is somehow unwanted or lonely or not good enough. But lonely is the one that stands out for you. I'm all alone. Nobody cares. I don't belong. I'm not special to Bev, right? That's how it would go?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. And I'm not, look, I just want to share a quick story. I know we're running out of time here, but I got
to
share this.
No, I don't want you to, because I want to get to this lady, okay?
Okay, I gotta stop you,
right? Because it is wax and wane, and I want to, can you help me? I want you to stay there for a minute. We're talking about this, and I'm helping you put it together, but I would like you to be able to, and then I'm going to ask Bev to go through the same process. Could you turn to Bev, please? And could you say, the times when I get triggered, you know, I start to feel like I'm the outcast. I start to feel rejected. I get triggered. You might put your eyes up to the ceiling. You might just turn away from me. The times I get triggered and I show you anger, you know, and I, what I'm really feeling underneath is I'm feeling lonely and maybe worried that I'm not going to belong with you. I'm not special enough for you. Yeah. Does that fit for you?
Yeah. Yeah, I think.
Can you tell your version of that?
Okay, so my version is something that you've heard me say to you before, which is the thing I want the most from you is also the thing I fear the most, and that is to be seen. Right? I want to feel like you see me. I don't care if the world sees me. I only want one person to see me.
And I get so scared if I feel like you're not seeing me.
Yeah, and I do. I get freaked out when when it's not you. And then I get really freaked out when someone else that I run into, right? Remember back in the days we weren't getting along, I go to the pub and talk to other people, and then all of a sudden little Susie Q, I don't know why Susie gets the rap for this, but sorry, Sue. You know, all of a sudden, oh, I'm feeling seen by her. And that freaks me out because I have such an innate, strong desire to be seen.
I want to be seen. I want to be accepted. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the outcast, right? The one who doesn't, who's not good enough somehow, right? So that's what I'm wanting. And when I'm showing you how angry I am in the past, when I'd get all big, when inside I'd be scared. I'd be scared because you don't see me. I'm not sure you value me. I'm not sure I'm the one you want. So I'm scared. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think honestly, all anger, I have to think this through a little bit more, but it feels like all anger comes from being afraid.
Yeah. Yeah. And what you wanted was to be seen and accepted. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay, even if I am the village idiot.
Right. Well, we're not going to get caught there, okay?
So, okay, sorry.
Of course, you're not the village idiot. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing this right here, which takes a lot of courage, okay? So, you're not, let's just take that as a given that you're not the village idiot and this lady's here with you. So, that was brilliant, Drew. That was brilliant. That's you pinning down your raw spot, looking, having the courage to look at it, put it into words, make sense of it and share it with your lady. That's brilliant, okay? Because that's dealing with your vulnerability in a positive way instead of getting big and angry or upset or going to the pub and talking to Susie. So that's brilliant. Now
Just want to be clear, there's no Susie. I didn't even meet a Susie. I can't even remember a Susie.
Okay, so Bev, I want to know from you. When your raw spot gets triggered, when this dance gets going, when the music of the dance gets overwhelming for you, which was your word, right? What is the trigger? Can you pin it down? Is it suddenly his voice gets bigger? Is it the way he takes up in the room? What's the trigger for you? When you suddenly feel like you've got to be on guard, what's the trigger for you?
Well, because it usually manifests in anger.
Yeah.
And I naturally avoid and want to have peace in my life.
Right. Anger's difficult for you. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just want to run away, avoid, and pretend like everything's okay.
So the first time you'd pick up anger would be what? He'd raise his voice? Is that? It helps to be aware of the trigger because it's going to happen
again. No, he's more a look person. He can do that nasty eyebrow or give a look and you're like, all right, here we go. So yeah, he's a master of the dirty look. And there'd be times where he would do it. He wouldn't even realize he's doing it. It's just there. But that's going off of a trigger.
Okay, so you help me. So suddenly things start to go wrong. Suddenly you start to realize you're on guard. What's happened is you're triggered that this guy would look at you and he'd give you a certain dirty look. And your brain would go, uh-oh, there's something bad or unpredictable or negative going to happen. And how would you, can you remember, how would you feel in your body when that happens?
Defeated. Probably is the biggest word. So it's something I haven't been able to fix over the years. So
you'd say, oh, here we go again. I'm not going to be able to do anything about this. You used the word helpless actually before. Yeah. I'm defeated. I'm not going to be able to do anything about this. Probably you'd get tense. Mostly we do. I don't know if you'd feel that tension. But probably you get tense in your body,
Yeah, I was saying to Drew today, I said, I think I do get angry inside. I just don't let that manifest in any way. So I think I do get angry, but I don't do anything with that anger.
Holding it. Yeah. Right? There's a danger coming from somewhere. And of course, it's even more significant because it's coming to the person from the person who you look to for safety and connection. So suddenly everything's dangerous and he gives you a dirty look and this feeling of say to yourself, here we go. You help me. There's nothing I can do. I'm defeated. I've never been able to. Here we go. This dance is just going to play out now. Right. And you hold your anger. Some part of you is mad, but you hold it in. So your body's probably getting tense.
Huh? Yeah. And then I just go about everything like nothing happened.
Which drives me mental.
Of course it does.
Which could mean I could be trying something, get you a cup of coffee or something. Like I'd be making coffee and I'd ask him if he'd want one rather. Like I don't become sucky. I don't become vindictive.
No, so you just act like nothing's happening.
Yeah.
You just say, that's actually a beautiful defense mechanism. It's like, no, for her, not for you.
Oh, okay.
But it's a beautiful defense mechanism because basically you act like, no, this isn't happening because there's nothing I can do here. I'm already feeling helpless. There's nothing I can do. This is just going to play out now. And inside, underneath the suppressing the anger and the tension about there's nothing I can do, there's this helplessness. Is that the best word for you? What's the best word?
And hopelessness. Like, the longer it went on, the more I went, and we talked about this today, hopelessness is not going to change, and a disappointment in myself for not making a change or getting out or continuing in the dance for so long without doing anything about it.
This is hopeless. I can't change it. I somehow shouldn't even be here. I'm putting myself down. There's nothing I can do to change this, right? Yeah. I'm just hearing, you help me. Most people in this position also end up saying things to themselves like, I'm never going to please this person. I'm never going to give this person what he wants. I can't do whatever this person wants me to do. They're always going to be disappointed in me. What's the point? I don't know if that resonates with you, but I've heard so many couples talk about this over the years.
Yeah, and that was the end of the conversation. That took me turning 50 and looking at my life and realizing, why am I still doing this when there was such hopelessness that, if I don't make a change now, I'm going to be stuck for the next 10 years and hate myself even more.
And so, that played into my, what's it called? Hold on. Raw spot. I don't know why I can't remember that.
You. Of course it did. The more she withdrew, that's what we're looking at here. The more she withdrew, and shut down and got hopeless and helpless. You didn't see the hopeless and helpless. You just saw she withdrew. To you, your brain probably said, there you are, you see, I'm not having any impact on her. I don't even matter to her. But the more she withdrew, the more you'd feel like, well, where the hell are you? You are going to listen to me. So you got bigger. You what's that, waxed? And she got smaller and smaller. And finally, she said, I'm gone, right? Yeah. I'm out of here. But now you've come back. So underneath all that, somehow apparent indifference, apparent ability to just shut him out and act like he wasn't doing anything, like, would you like a cup of coffee? Right? He comes in with his tank and you say, would you like a cup of coffee? You know, so underneath all that, in fact, what you weren't sharing with him was all this hurt about feeling hopeless and helpless. Yeah. And like, he's criticizing me, he's going for me, and here I am. There's nothing I can do. I'm never going to please him. It's just hopeless, right? What am I even doing here, standing here with this huge man getting angry at me, right? Yeah. Yeah, that's how it would go. Okay, so you help me. I want to put together the conversation again for you the way I did for Drew. What you're telling for Drew was, the trigger would be for me any sign of anger, particularly your dirty look. Is that right?
Yeah.
The dirty look. And what would happen is I start to feel defeated inside. I get tense. I might have said something like, would you like a coffee? I avoided, I shut down. But inside, I'm feeling like I'm not going to please this man. There's nothing I can do. I'm hopeless, I'm helpless, and I'd get smaller and smaller. Is that it? Am I getting it, Bev?
Yes, you're getting it, but I would pretend like just keeping everything on the surface like everything was okay.
Right. I'm going to stay on the surface. I'm going to pretend everything's okay because what I long for, which is some sort of peace, some sort of feeling of connection, right, that just wasn't going to happen. I was so defeated. So we've got it. So can you tell him? Could you share that with him, please? Because then you're dealing with your vulnerability in a new way. You're telling him about it and asking his help for it, right? That's what we're going to do in this program. We're going to get to the point where you help each other with these feelings so that if ever anything comes up like this again, you can deal with it in a way that pulls you close instead of what happened last time, which is it pushed you away from each other, ended up with you divorcing, right? So can you share that with him in the way, and I'll help you if you get stuck. How would you say it to him? When I see?
When you give me a dirty look, or I feel that you are angry at me, or I have interrupted you and stepping on your toes.
Yes.
It makes me retreat and go down that road of, it's always going to be like that. Nothing's ever
going
to change. And I feel hopeless and... I just shut down, basically.
Right. And in that, you're all alone too, aren't you? Mm-hmm. I shut down because there's nothing I can do to get your acceptance, approval. I'm the problem in a way, aren't you? At that point, yeah. you're the problem. Yeah.
You said it too, and I've said it to him too. I feel like I'm never going to be able to make you happy.
I'll never please him. I'll never make him happy. And that's a really hard place, right? I don't know how to be with my special one in a way that pleases him and makes him happy and makes him want to be with me. That's a very, very difficult place. That's a kind of sad place to be, actually. Yeah?
Yeah, for sure. Hopeless, sad. And then, you know, there's that internal being angry at yourself because why are you stuck in this, and why have you been stuck in it for so long?
Yes, it's kind of like angry at yourself for not suddenly being able to take your power and do something, right? But you're caught. And we all get caught in these places where, and you said the word last time, you said I'd get overwhelmed. So I'd say you should be able to do something about this, but in the moment, all this happens so fast, it just takes over, the dance gets going, and there you are again, you're stuck in this helplessness. Yeah, it's so human. I mean, that happens. That's so human. Yeah. It's just that we don't usually talk about it and we don't acknowledge it. And then it kind of just runs our lives in the background. You know, this emotional music runs our lives, and people go through life and they lose each other and they get divorced and they don't understand what happened and they find themselves in the same position again, right?
By the way, I just...
Hang on just a second. Yeah. What's it feel like to say that to this man? Because he's the big, powerful one. So you just did the opposite of what you used to do in these scenarios. You turned and you didn't shut down. You turned and you said to him, this is what's happening for me. This is my reality. So I'd like to know, what's it like for you to have said that to him right here, right now?
Yeah, it's empowering. And I think it's, you know, when you shut down the communication, you feel to blame too, because you're not feeling safe to say the words or that the words will be heard.
Yeah.
When you're in the emotions of them, because you don't feel safe, you feel more vulnerable. So, you know, we're a little bit removed from that. So even the things that we are talking about since we've been back together, you know, we feel that we have that safe place that we can say anything and revisit things in our past without the anger or the emotions. I mean, the hurt's still underlying it. Like, the raw spots are always going to be there because there's history and triggers.
Yes, yes they are. That's why we're talking about it.
Yes, exactly. But we can do it from a place of, I guess we've got a mutual respect back because we've changed who we are. And we're not, I'm not going to be putting up with any of that stuff anymore. I've already said that. This new person is not going to shut down anymore. And Drew has always been the one who's wanted to communicate, and he's a great communicator and he's always tried to communicate. So it's been me shutting down. So now that I have made that decision that that's not the person I am anymore. Just finding my words and finding the emotions and
your balls.
Finding my balls.
Well, I think actually I like words better in that case because what you're saying, it really hits me. Okay, that when we get caught in that position, if we're with a powerful partner and we're in that withdrawn, avoidant position, often what happens is we can't find our words. Our brain's just sort of in helplessness and hopelessness, and we can't find our words. There's too much happening. So I think you're saying something important. You're saying, I've got my emotional balance back. We went through the whole thing. We lost each other. We got divorced. And now we're turning back towards each other and we're going to make a new relationship, right? And I'm starting to realize I need to find my words.
Yeah.
I'm going to find words for this so that when next time when this vulnerable place gets hit and this raw spot gets hit, I'm not helpless and hopeless. Yeah. I have my words. I know what's going on. I know what I'm feeling. I know that it makes sense. And I actually have other options. I don't have to just shut down. I can actually turn to Drew and say, right now we're doing our moon dance and I'm feeling raw and I'm in this, this hopelessness is coming up for me. And what I want is to find my words so that you can hear me. I want to feel that you can hear me. And then we can dance, right? That's a whole different Bev, isn't it?
Sure is.
Yeah. And a couple things. One, I just want to clear up for everybody who's just tuning in that we came that close to getting divorced. But we separated for 2 years.
I'm sorry. I understand.
That's okay. I just don't want my dad to hear this and go, they got divorced?
okay. You lost each other, but then you came back and that takes...
Yeah.
But I want you guys to hear some of the words you did find, because they're words that we sometimes think as adults that we shouldn't feel and we shouldn't be using. You know, Drew, you said, actually, I in these raw spot places, when everything goes wrong between us and there's no safe connection, I end up feeling scared and freaked out because I'm not going to be seen. I'm somehow going to be the outcast, right? I'm not going to make it here. So I feel scared. And you ended up, Bev, saying, I feel hopeless and helpless, small, powerless, right? Like, I'm not going to be able to please you. These are important words, because we haven't taught people how to talk about these soft places. And then they can't share them and help each other with them. In a good relationship, people actually, they don't just try not to step on their raw spot, start their raw spots. It's more than that. They actually help each other with these soft hurt places. And people grow, they get stronger. They get, you know.
The ironic thing for me in all of this is that the thing I want the most from Bev is for her to lean into me.
Yes.
Well, how do I say this? What a great job I did at creating a space for her to want to lean in.
Yes, that's right. And that's the huge irony of love. We want something so much, but we don't know how to deal with our emotions and keep our emotional balance. So we end up, when we get scared, especially, and our raw spots get triggered, we dance in the exact way that makes it almost impossible for our partner to come and be with us the way we want. And that's so ironic. And we do it. We do it. I mean, yeah. Human beings, dancing close is difficult. And nobody teaches us, you guys. We teach kids trigonometry in school. How come we don't teach them anything about all this? Duh. Because we need to have families and we need to be able to share with people and support each other. Goodness me. That's what civilization is. That's what human beings need. But we don't do it. But you guys are doing it.
Yeah.
Look how brilliant you are.
We teach trigonometry, but we don't teach trigger symmetry.
Very good. I like that a lot. No, we don't. We don't. In fact, we teach people, if you're adult and mature and strong, you don't have any triggers and, you know, you don't have any needs and you don't have any vulnerabilities, which of course is just a big fat lie, isn't it? Big fat boo-boo.
Okay, just before we wrap up conversation number two, finding the raw spots, again, we're chatting with the one and only Dr. Sue Johnson, who wrote this crazy book, Hold Me Tight. And of course, there's the online course that we're going to talk about at the end, and you probably already heard about it in the middle. You'll hear about it. But I just want to clarify something. We had a tough time. I had an easy time finding my raw spot because I'm more verbose about my raw spot. Bev's raw spot, we had a harder time actually finding and locating and putting a real, like real words on it. So I just want to go to Bev for a second. Do you think you're clear as to what your raw spot is?
Yeah, I had to dig deep, but I think what we came up with was what it is.
Well, you know,
she tried to get out of that. She still doesn't know what is it.
When you really think about it, really what we're talking about in the end is fear. It's either fear of being shut out and told that, you know, we're somehow not going to make it. We're not going to be seen. We're not going to be heard. We're not going to be responded to. Or fear, you said, I just say to myself, I'm never going to please this person. I'm never gonna be able to be who this person wants.
Right. So what is that a fear of?
That's a fear of being rejected and fear of failing. Fear of like, he's never gonna look at me and tell me, you know, I love you the way you are, you know, you're different than me, but I love you the way you are, and I know you're quieter than me, and you know, that it's never gonna happen. I'm always gonna feel that I'm disappointing him. I'm always going to feel somehow less than, right? And that's what most people say. So help, but you both end up alone, which is terrifying for us as bonding human beings. You end up scaring the hell out of each other. I mean, we put different words to it, but in the end, in love, we scare the hell out of each other, and then we say to each other, would you like to dance?
Would you like a cup of coffee?
No, thank you. No, thank you very much. I'm terribly busy. I have other places to go and things to do, right? Because you've suddenly turned into the enemy.
Yeah.
And we're vulnerable in love. That's the truth. You can't, you know, need somebody and have that magical connection and then not be freaked out when it suddenly disappears on you. And it is going to disappear on you. It is. So.
Yeah. Well, again, just to recap, what we talked briefly about last week was we went away on our honeymoon. And even on our honeymoon, the last night, there was a situation where it freaked Bev out. She went right to, holy crap, this isn't going to work.
That's right.
Sorry, did I?
Or here we go again.
Yeah.
That's right. But, you know, you guys, so next week, what I want you to do is look at the next conversation, because what the next conversation does is it takes the dance and the music and it asks you to stay with it a bit longer and think about it a bit more and think about an actual incident. That's a good one, Drew. Maybe you want to talk about that incident where you got back together and you said, holy crap, here we go again. It's not going to work. And I want you to sit with that incident and apply all you know about raw spots and triggers and dances and music to it, so we can take that apart. The idea of that is I want you to create some real safety, that you know that when you get triggered again, because you will, when you get triggered again, you can, some part of your brain says, hey, wait a minute. Now I have words for it. Now I have a way of understanding it. Now I know it's okay. It's just human. Wait a minute. And I remember that conversation. It's okay. I can get my balance back. And we can choose to create another dance. We can deal with this in a new way rather than get angry or shut down. We can deal with it in a new way. So next week, we're doing that. We're doing conversation 3, which is revisiting a rocky moment. What we're really doing is recapping the last 2 conversations before I ask you guys to take bigger risks with each other.
Yeah, that makes sense. It makes total sense. Okay.
I'd like you to read the recapping, revisiting a rocky moment. You can go to the book and you can practice again the dialogues you did here, the raw spot conversation. My experience with couples is they do them once and it feels awkward and weird and strange. And then they do them a few more times and it gets easier and they learn more and more about each other and themselves.
Yeah.
So I'd like you to do that. Okay. And we'll meet together next time and do conversation 3.
All right. Awesome. Good. Sue, thank you very, very much again. And everybody else who's listening to the radio show, we're going to tell you a little bit more information about Sue, about the book, about the online course. Sue, thank you. And we'll see you next week when we pick it up here at Higher Ground Cafe in beautiful Bell Fountain. Okay. Bye, Sue.
Bye.
Okay, guys.
See ya.
All right, so she's British, hey, Tim? So she sometimes uses those.
Thank goodness she's not Irish.
Scary words. I know the words would be worser if she was Irish. Anyway, that's Dr. Sue and Bev and I, and that's part 2 of conversation number 2 on the Drew Marshall Show. This is part of a, what are we doing? It's part of a 9-week series. That's it. I don't have my glasses. I can't talk without my glasses.
That's awesome. Yes, a 9-week series to bring us to the end of the year.
What are we doing here? Anyway, it's a 9-week series with my wife and I and relationship guru and psychologist Dr. Sue Johnson.
So it brings us
to
the second last show.
Some very vulnerable spots there. What?
Brings us to the second last show.
What are you talking about?
Oh, it's 10 weeks left and you started it with 10 weeks.
Yeah.
So,
and then Bev will come in on the last show.
Oh, the very last show ever?
Yes. My wife will be here. My daddy will be here.
Will I be here?
Fingers crossed. No. If you want to watch the series of videos that we've been doing with Dr. Sue, go to drewmarshall.ca and click on the big thing that says Rebuilding Love.